Welcome in. It's Wisconsin Sports Daily, served up by Wendy's. Live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. Jason Hirshhorn joining us momentarily, co-founder of Leap Newsletter. Have you downloaded that Prize Picks app? Have you? You should have by this point. I've had mine for quite some time. It's daily fantasy. You're just picking more or less on two or more player stat projections. Real easy. Sign up today, get $50 instantly when you play $5. And all you have to do is use the code SPARKY, S-P-A-R-K-Y. Again, download the Prize Picks app, use code SPARKY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. You do not have to win. You just have to play $5. Then they'll give you $50, which means if you play $5 lineups going forward, you can play 10 more times before you ever have to put any more money into the Prize Picks app. And by that time, you'll have won a bunch of money to play with. It's a no-brainer. Prize Picks, run your game. Just use the code SPARKY, S-P-A-R-K-Y. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for details. Now, don't forget, springtime is here. Baseball season's underway, so don't miss your chance to add your favorite players from the diamond in your Prize Picks lineup. Whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first-inning runs, take your pick of more or less for your shot to win up to 1,000 times your cash today. Do it right now. Plus, Prize Picks offers weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts like Taco Tuesday. That's today. Each Tuesday, Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value for your lineups. Download the Prize Picks app right now and use code SPARKY, S-P-A-R-K-Y, to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. Again, download the app, use code SPARKY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, run your game. Joining us now, he is Jason B. Hirshhorn, co-founder of The Leap Newsletter. Follow him on Twitter at @by_JBH. Jason, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Sparky. I'm really excited to talk about quarterbacks for the Packers not named Jordan Love.
Okay, so this is my thing. When we talk about, because you've grown about backup quarterbacks and so forth, when we talk about this whole idea of how this is all kind of went about and kind of evolved from a Packer fan standpoint and Packer franchise standpoint, this goes all the way back to, you know, Ron Wolf, where you've got guys like Brunell, Aaron Brooks, Ty Detmer, Matt Hasselbeck. He really made a living on getting guys and then not necessarily letting them start in front of Brett Favre, but then trading them off for higher picks than where you took them at in the draft. And seemingly along the way, I kind of feel like this is kind of went sideways, and the Packers haven't had nearly as much success in recent time doing the same thing.
Yeah, there was a period of time during the Ron Wolf era where the Packers literally drafted a quarterback in the late rounds every single year. Now, Some of those quarterbacks never played it down for Green Bay, and there are names that you've probably never heard of if you're, you know, the average Packers fan. However, there are names, as you just listed, who just go on to become NFL starters. They turn into really valuable assets for the Packers in a trade. And you go back to about a year ago now, Brian Gutekunst, at, I believe, the owner's meeting, was asked about Sean Clifford, who was just completing his first year in the NFL, and Gutekunst just kind of pivots the question into talking about how he wants to get back to drafting quarterbacks in the late rounds, and he thinks it's a very healthy part of rosters and NFL franchise health. And from that point forward, you know I started looking at what the Packers might do, if there's a profile there for these guys. Turns out there is. And a year ago, we were able to predict who the Packers were going to draft a quarterback in the late rounds in Michael Pratt. And that same profile, by the way, also highlighted Joe Milton III, who, at least after 1 year, is probably the most promising of those late-round quarterbacks in the 2024 class. So, you know, come back to 2025. If you look at the roster right now, the Packers don't need a backup quarterback. Obviously, they have Jordan Love healthy. They have Malik Willis, who did a tremendous job in the backup role when called upon. But Willis is going into the last year of his deal. The Packers, like most teams paying a quarterback near the top of the market, are not going to spend what it takes to keep a guy like Malik Willis in the building once his contract tolls, which means they're going to be in the backup market as soon as this offseason, trying to figure out what they're going to do beyond that. And most of the time, that means finding someone on a rookie contract that you have cost control for multiple years, and if things go well, you can maybe pivot into multiple draft picks, one of those trades like what Ron Wolf did before it.
If we're being honest, their profile stinks. Clifford didn't work out. Pratt didn't obviously work out. He's somewhere else now, too. What is the profile? What is the things that they look for? Because I'd like to see him change it, because to me, so far, it hasn't worked.
So you're looking at a sample of two there, right?
Now, that's right, small. Clifford
has, you know, he's played a little bit of football, obviously, like he saw some action both in the regular season as a rookie and then that playoff game after they pulled Jordan Love because the game had gotten out of hand. So, you know, that's not a huge sample size to look at just for Sean Clifford. Obviously, Michael Pratt, he had some moments during training camp in the preseason, but they ultimately exposed him to waivers. He ends up going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You can't really call that a success, at least not for Green Bay. That said, the profile is not necessarily the problem here. You're talking about late-round quarterbacks. If these guys were viewed by the league as having true franchise savior potential, they would have gone in the first round or early in the second. So you're looking at guys with flaws, trying to figure out who is the best chance at overcoming those flaws in the NFL. So you're not expecting the hit rate of these guys to be very high. But when you do hit, you can hit very, very big because of how valuable quarterbacks who would even start for a few games can be if they're on a rookie contract. So let's talk about that profile. The Packers have more flexibility on this than other teams do. You know, there are teams in the league that basically will not draft a quarterback that's shorter than like 6'3" and a half. That's not Green Bay. Pretty consistently, the guys that are drafting the late round, going from 2005 to present, are at least 6'2 and above. They also have at least 32 games of collegiate experience, most of that coming what we would now call the Power Four. Obviously, if you go back far enough, they would use different terms, but we're talking about the bigger conferences by and large, so there are some exceptions to that. And you're talking about guys who are plus athletes. Now, in the piece I wrote for The Leap, I used RAS. I'm not saying that's what the Packers actually use, but just a reasonable facsimile of the kind of composite athletic ranking that they use to figure out who's pretty athletic, who's not. Obviously, we've had the discussion before. So I have guys who are, again, plus athletes for the position, at least 6'2", 32 games of experience or more, and with exactly one exception, these are all guys who are invited to the combine. So once you take those things into account, you can significantly narrow down the pool of late-round guys, and that's when you can start to find the value.
Okay, so my counterpoint to this, Jason Hirschhorn, co-founder of the Leap newsletter. Go read all of his stuff. Does a great job, him and Peter Bukowski. Follow him on Twitter at @by_JBH here on Wisconsin Sports Daily, served up by Wendy's on the Fan. Sparky with you. My counterpoint is, then why make the move for Malik Willis? Because, again, Malik Willis does not fit the profile necessarily. Maybe from a height standpoint, that stuff. But as far as style of play, he does not fit in with the other two.
Now, style of play is not really part of the profile. If you look back at, again, 2020 or 2005 to present, you have a lot of different styles of quarterbacks. You know, the way, for example, that Sean Clifford plays is very different than the way that Ingle Martin did or that B.J. Coleman did. So it's not necessarily style of play here. Again, we're looking at traits that the Packers believe they can, in the NFL, develop into being more than they were in college. Now, you're right to some degree that Malik Willis doesn't fit the profile. He's shorter. He's a little over 6 foot. But we've also seen that the Packers' profile for draft picks is different than what they'll use for hunting guys, whether it's in free agency or in a trade. You know, once you've shown something in the NFL, even if you're a guy they weren't interested in during the draft, they will take a shot on you. You know, Xavier McKinney, for example, doesn't fit what they look for in a safety coming out of college. But after he showed what he did with the Giants for 4 years, they were very comfortable investing in him. So Malik Willis is not really part of this equation. I know they traded a draft pick to get him. That was more circumstantial because they're in a position where they did feel comfortable having Sean Clifford as their top backup. Michael Pratt still needed more work. They wanted to have somebody they felt like they could rely on if Jordan Love went down. And lo and behold, he did in week one. So the Willis thing is not really part of the profile because they were looking at guys coming out of college. But you can certainly see the value in a quarterback with athleticism and skills the way that Willis did coming in from Tennessee.
Jason, I know. I am not a fan of having a different style player as my backup quarterback than that of my quarterback, because then you're having to redo and recalibrate your offense to build around said player coming in. And Matt LaFleur can say all he wants, well, we really didn't change anything. Yes, you did. That offense was not the same offense they were running with Jordan Love. And because they were able to run that offense effectively, and Josh Jacobs was to play as well as he did off of Malik Willis, that kind of led them down the path of being more conservative in the second half of the season, continuing to run with Josh Jacobs. If I'm a general manager, I want the style of play of my quarterback to duplicate or be damn close to whoever my starting quarterback is, especially if it's an anchor quarterback on a long-term big money deal that's not going anywhere.
There are pros and cons to either approach. If you can find a quarterback that is stylistically like your starter, yes, as you said, there's probably less adaption required. Obviously, he's not going to be as talented as your starter, otherwise he would have been
correct.
The starter.
Right.
But there's less schematic adaption required. The other side of this is, by having a backup quarterback who's stylistically very different than your starter, if you have to play him, it actually opens up opportunities to expose the opposing defense, who's prepared for what you normally do with your starter, and is therefore not prepared, ill-prepared, for what your backup's going to do. Malik Willis, obviously very different stylistically than Jordan Love. That's a big part of why they had success with him last season when he started against the Titans, when he came in against the Jags in particular. Like, there's advantages and disadvantages both ways. I don't think either one is necessarily a good or a bad idea. It's more about having a capable backup in whatever form it takes. And again, if you look at some of the late-round prospects in this draft that match what the Packers historically have looked for at the position with late-round quarterbacks, you get some of each. There are guys who, not exactly like Malik Willis, but guys who run as a main component of their game. There are also guys who really are pocket passers, and they're going to attack you primarily with their arms. So there's a little bit of, you know, Baskin-Robbins with this. Like, if they're looking for a guy who they feel is like or more like Malik Willis, there are some options there. If, however, they want someone who's more of a drop-back passer, maybe not overall the way that Jordan Love plays, but closer to that, they'll have those options too. There are actually, I would say, more quarterback prospects that kind of fit their profile this year in terms of the late round guys. Like, it's not a great class at the top, and that's where all the criticism does come in. But after you get past those first three rounds worth of guys, it actually becomes a very compelling class. There are guys who can do a lot of things that last few years we weren't seeing so much from prospects projected for the fourth through seventh round.
Give me a couple guys that fit what the Packers like.
So, one name in particular, and I mentioned this to Peter on the Lock on Packers podcast, that I would say is almost certainly going to go in the draft, but very, very unlikely to go anywhere before the top 100 picks, is Memphis's Steph Hennigan. Now,
oh, God.
This is a smaller program.
You got to understand, I fill in doing, well, not anymore, but I was filling in doing afternoons in Memphis for a couple of years, so I'm very familiar with Steph Hennigan, but go ahead.
So Steph Hennigan certainly fits their athleticism and size and experience profiles. He was a combine invitee. This is where I think the Packers overlap really comes in. Matt LaFleur has said on multiple occasions that he likes his quarterbacks to be fearless throwers. This is someone who absolutely fits that.
Yes, he does.
For better and for worse, but I would say
like
that
Clifford.
At least in 2020.
It's like Clifford coming from Penn State. It's the same type of thing. He doesn't get as much publicity necessarily as Clifford did, but they're the same type of player.
So I'm going to disagree with you on that because of what we saw in 2024. I'm aware earlier in his career, he was certainly happier to take more risks. In 2024, he was able to move the offense down the field with regularity without exposing the ball the way that he had earlier in his career, which makes sense, right? Like, he's in his third or fourth year as the starter. He has a lot more experience. He finally took that jump. So according to Pro Football Focus, he had 30 big-time throws, which is what they define as throws that are generally further down the field and into tighter windows. These are not the layup throws where, like, you know, the receiver just broke from the defense, there's a busted coverage, and he's wide open. That's not what this counts. This is you threw into a tight window, usually further down the field. These are harder throws than complete. He had 30 of them. By point of comparison, if you look at Quinn Ewers, a guy who's projected to go sometime in the top 100 picks, give or take, he had 20 big-time throws. You're talking about significantly more than a guy like that. Also, turnover-worthy plays. Last season, Seth Hennigan had 11. Again, by point of comparison, Quinn Ewers had 21.
Oof.
This is a guy who has done significantly better in terms of both creating opportunities down the field and protecting the football than a guy who is at least has a decent chance of going on day two. Guy who played at a very big program. Obviously, the Texas Longhorns were in the playoffs this year. So that's just one example. Again, there are other things to like about Hennigan. He's one of the better athletes among the quarterbacks in this class, independent of what round they're going to go. But if you're looking for a guy who's going to be available on day three, and again, all the quarterbacks who will be available at that point will have multiple major flaws in their game, because if they didn't, they just would have been picked earlier. That's just what this exercise is. If you're looking for someone who has skills and athleticism that you can work with as an NFL team, that's someone I think really makes sense for Green Bay pretty much any time round five and on.
Talking with Jason Hershower and co-founder of The Leap. Follow him on Twitter at @by_JBH. Leap newsletter is amazing. Him and Peter Bukowski do a great job with that. You're listening to him here on Wisconsin Sports Daily, served up by Wendy's. Sparky with you. Does winning pedigree, do you think, matter to this team?
Well, I think they would certainly like to have a quarterback who had success in college from a wins-loss standpoint.
Because you look at Jordan Love, right? I mean, he had the great year at Utah State. Then the offense completely changed roster or personnel-wise, and then obviously it wasn't very good that next year.
Yeah, the context really matters with all of these guys, if they depend on what round they go. Jordan Love, before his even final year in college, as you highlighted, played extremely well, and he did so without a ton of NFL talent around him. Well, he goes into his final year, not only is it a different scheme, you know, there's been a coaching change, but there's even less NFL talent around him, at least on offense. And, you know, his productivity suffered as a result. Now, the Packers are going to take that in consideration, but with a lot of these quarterbacks, the ones who have played, again, 32-plus games in college, you have a big enough sample size that you can really separate the signal from the noise. Not looking at one-year starters here. You're looking at guys who probably started two, sometimes 3 years, especially in the current era where you have the extended eligibility brought on by the 2020 COVID rules. So you actually have a pretty big sample size with all of these quarterbacks, at least most of these quarterbacks. So, you know, you don't really have to worry about whatever would be the equivalent of like a Mitch Trubisky, where he looks really good, but it was only 1 year as a starter, and that's all you have to go on. These are all guys, everyone highlighted in the piece, who started multiple seasons and for the most part did so at a very high level. There are some up and down with certain prospects. These are all guys where you at least look at an extended period of time where they played really well and their team succeeded as a result.
Jason B. Hershower and co-founder of the Leap newsletter. Tell everybody about that and the exciting things they can find.
That, well, you can read that entire story at theleap.football. It is one of the more research-heavy pieces that we do throughout the year. We have other things like that, not just going into the draft, but coming out of it. My co-founder, Peter Bukowski, will have a piece going up tomorrow. I don't want to spoil it, but it's going to be about the kind of prospects that you're looking at that you probably haven't heard as much about. Also, we are going to have coming out of the draft all the necessary breakdowns that you need if you're a Packers fan to understand who are the new members of the Green Bay roster and what they can bring in 2025 and beyond.
There he is, Jason B. Hershower, co-founder of the Leap newsletter. Follow him on Twitter at @by_JBH. Thank you very much, my friend, and as always, a pleasure having you on.
Take care, Sparky.